G'day guys, welcome back to another special episode of Motorsport Republic, and today we have Aussie Supersport sensation Tom Edwards. Thanks for coming in.
Good, pleasure to be here.
Really, really good. How's your weekend been so far?
Yeah, good. So not racing this weekend, just down watching with my team. I'm racing for D34G this year on the Ducati in the European rounds of World Supersport. So yeah, just come down, give the team a bit of support, help Ollie out a bit and do some watching and networking and yeah.
How good's that? So have you done obviously testing and everything with the V2 as well or?
Yeah, so I went over to Andalusia in Spain about a month ago now and had my first few laps on that thing. So yeah, did a few days on it and it was pretty cool.
How good's that? Yeah. And you came off the R6, wasn't it?
Yeah, so I've been on the R6 for the last 3 or 4 years, yeah.
And what's the differences like?
Yeah, massive differences, you know. And I had an expectation of the Ducati in my head to, and it was completely different to what I was expecting how it was going to be, you know. I thought that it was going to be a little bit heavy and, like, hard to get in and you know, a bit of a wild thing. But it really is just, it's really stiff, you know, because most of the frame is the engine, unlike the R6 where you start with a frame, or your normal Japanese bikes where you start with a frame and then you put the engine in and build everything else and then put the engine in, you know. So the bike is just so stiff, which, you know, just makes a corner entry so good, and it's much better on the front end than the R6, which I wasn't expecting. I thought it'd be hard to turn in, but the front just really stays super planted. And the difficult part for me was learning to not open the gas super early. So on the R6, you come into the corner, you brake late obviously, and all over the shop, just as hard as you're pushing, that's the better. And just opening the gas early, getting it to slide, and just as long as you've got the gas open as early as you can. Whereas with the Ducati, you know, I think it's just going to be a matter of keeping it in two wheels. And you see with Bulliger last year, you know, he very rarely was out of shape on the thing. Even in the superbikes, they're similar. So I think that it's going to be a matter of just being smooth on it. And also by the end of the test, I was riding it properly. You know, at the start, I could go fast, but I was just destroying the rear tire. So over those few days, I just learned that you just have to really be patient with it, come into the corner really quick but smooth, carry your speed, and wait to open the throttle, and then all of a sudden, all at once,
crack it open.
But try and kind of stand the bike up onto the fat part of the tire, which is the big difference between the R6, where you open it you're fully leaned over, way 10 meters earlier in the corner, you know.
Did you have to work that out yourself over the 3 days, or did you have someone in the background going, this is how you ride the bike?
So Davide Giuliano is the team owner, and he obviously is a ex-World Superbike racer on the Ducati and really successful motorbike racer. So it's great to have him on board to help out with the transition from the four-cylinder to the two-cylinder. And, you know, he helped out definitely. And even in the riding style, like just telling me to be more over the front of the bike and stuff like that. But also, you know, being a racer, going on a new bike, I was watching the videos of Bulliger and Montella and everyone else who's been on them last year, you know, and you can see visually compared to the R6s, you know, the lines that they take to really make a V out of the corner, and the way that they're standing the bike up and stuff. So I guess some of it is, you know, you got to kind of learn yourself, but also having Davide there to give me a hand with tips is really good.
That's so handy, having that like experienced like team owner who's raced as well, you know, because that's just another layer to that team, which you can obviously help improve yourself and the riding and your riding racing journey as well. which is cool.
Yeah, it's going to fast track the development of yourself so much quicker as well, because you got that guy telling you, and you obviously respect him highly. So that's a big thing.
Yeah, yeah. Tell us about your journey. How did you get to the Supersport paddock, Europe? Love to know, because it seems so different.
Yeah, it's a long story.
Yeah, so, we'll start from the start.
Yeah, yeah.
So all my family's always been into racing, and mainly dirt track and enduro, and you know, a bit more of a dirt background. And they still had road bikes, and I've got some uncles who do some, you know, hobby road racing and stuff. But you know, it's I haven't had a Troy Bayliss as a dad or something like that. So you know, as soon as I was born, I was brought into motorbikes, and all my family's always loved it. So I started out racing dirt track when I was 5. So I started being around motorbikes since before I can remember. Started racing dirt track when I was 5 on a CRF50. And then over the years, you know, worked my way under 65s and yada, yada, yada.
Mm-hmm.
When I was about 9, I think I won my first New South Wales title, and that's when I really went from just riding around to being really competitive. And all of a sudden, all at once, it all clicked for dirt track. And I went to the USA. I won multiple Australian titles, went over to the USA and won a lot of AMA titles on dirt track.
That's cool.
Yeah, so I did 3 years in a row over there.
What were you riding?
I was riding 65s, 85s, 252 stroke.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
cool.
Yeah.
So what's the power like on a flat track of a two stroke?
I always love two strokes. Yeah. So, you know, even when I come home now, I always make sure that I'm out there on a dirt track and and jump on two stroke. All my motocross bikes are two strokes. Got a KX 500 that I always race.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
What year KX 500?
02.
Oh, that's one of the last ones, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Fuck, that's
too scary.
Yeah, they're so nuts, those things.
Yeah, so I raced a lot of dirt track. And then, so when I was about 11 or 12, I transitioned over and got to ride a R15, which is just a little 150 Yamaha, in an Australian series called the MRRDA. And that was through a dealership called Graham Boyd Motorcycles, who was in Newcastle. And they helped me out to get the bike. And I did a year with that, with just me and Dad carting the trailer around Australia. And that was kind of the first year that I was racing a road bike. And then after that, with the rules at the time in Australia, you know, they've really improved it since to help the younger guys get, you know, with this 300 class and stuff. I think that now the rule is from 13 or 14 or something, you can start racing the Supersport 300. So at that time I was 12 and was stuck on the 150. So I went to Thailand for a year and raced in the 250 championship in Thailand.
Awesome.
Yeah, so that was when I was 12 to 13.
Yep.
So I raced in Thailand for a year, and that really improved me a lot in my road racing, because it was quite competitive over there as well, especially those smaller capacity bikes. A lot of Asia is really competitive, even in World Supersport 300 and stuff. You know, if a lot of wildcard guys jump over, they're fast straight away. So it was really the perfect place to learn to start riding those bikes. Then at the end of that season, I tried out for the Asia Talent Cup.
Yeah.
And when I was 13, 14, raced a season in the Asia Talent Cup, which was really good for experiencing working with professionals, you know.
Yeah, and they're like Moto3 bikes, is it, the Asia Talent Cup?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
so they're basically just standard NSF Honda Moto3 bikes. So that was a really good way to start working with professionals, and you have the suspension guy there, and, you know, you don't have data logging or anything, but to get you in that mindset and to have, you know, some pressure there from expecting results and stuff like that, was my first taste of that. And then after a season of doing that and going down the Moto3 route, I came back to Australia when I was 14, sorry. And, sorry.
No, you're right.
Yeah. I came back to Australia when I was 14 and raced the Supersport 300 and the R3 Cup Championships.
Oh, yep, yep.
So at the end of that season, after winning the R3 Cup, I got a wild card into the World Supersport 300, which was in Jerez. I went over there, did that.
How was that?
It was really good, you know. That was my first time ever racing in any World Championship, and you know, it was such a step up from Australia. And I think the big difference was, you know, in Australia that whole year, there was probably five or six of us who now are racing in World Supersport or over in Spain or somewhere, you know. So it was really competitive in that front group. Whereas when I went over to Europe and raced in the World Supersport 300, the whole field was like that, you know, right down to 28 or 30 or however many were on the grid, were all within that much. So I think that was definitely the big difference for me. And going into it and it being my first race, I think I kind of got bullied a little bit, you know. I still got a really good result for my first race and actually signed the contract that weekend for the following year.
Yeah,
so that was my first.
Worked out really well for you.
Yeah, so it was really cool. And that was with Rob Venegor, who a lot of other Australian riders have gone over there and got their start in the World Championship or the German Championship because of him.
Yep.
Yeah. So I signed with him for the following year, which was 2018.
Yeah.
for World Supersport 300, and that was the first year that they brought out the Ninja 400.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that World Supersport 300, that follows a superbike around Europe, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So they do all of the European rounds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah. So that 2018 was my first year in that. As I said, it was the first year that they brought out the Ninja 400.
Yep.
So we came into it and, you know, been I think I was 15 or 16, you know.
It's so young, seriously.
And I got to the first test and, you know, you've got Scott DeRue, who was last year's world champion, and you know, all these guys who were racing in the world championship, and you're just some kid from Australia who's rocking up and now racing in the world championship.
Crazy.
And we got to the first test at Aragon and I went out after the first session and I learned the track. I'd never been there before. First, second, third session, I went and looked at the timesheets and I was sitting in like fourth and I'm like, what, is no one else like going out?
Is it this easy?
What's happening? Like, and then, I think after the first test, I was in the top three, you know?
And
every session, you know, I'd be first or second or third or... And I just, it was such a surreal feeling.
Yeah.
I was like, what's going on?
Yeah,
you
know?
Does that sort of click for you? They think, I've actually got something here that is on the world stage.
No, it didn't.
seeing Marc Marquez, here we come.
Yeah, no, I didn't. I was like, something's wrong. it was really cool. And that definitely took a bit of time to sink in. And it wasn't until those first few rounds, you know, that I really realized that I was competitive in the world championship.
That would give you a lot of confidence as well going into the rest of the season as well, just knowing that you can be competitive.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, that year I crashed a lot.
Yeah.
Was my downfall. Sorry, my whole Supersport 300 campaign was really good and I had some really good results, but my definite downfall was just putting myself in the wrong position sometimes and stuff and just some crashes.
It seems to always be the way, though. We've spoken to quite a few people now and it's like the rookie season is always the one where people are going to...
It's always the learning curve, right?
Yeah, it's a big learning curve. That's all right.
And in learning the tyres and the new tracks. I mean, you've never been to Aragon before and you've put it on, you know, top five. It's incredible.
So that whole 2018 season, I was learning the tracks, you know, rocking up to race weekend and learning the tracks. And I had some really good results, pole position in Portimao, you know, a lot of top eight finishes and stuff. Crashing out of the lead on the last lap. You know,
that'd be the worst.
Yeah, it was the worst. But, you know, just being young and inexperienced a little bit, you know, that's just what happened.
Yeah.
But luckily after that year and getting some really good results and stuff, Park and Go, who were a competitive team, I think they came second that year with Mika Perez. They reached out to me and I got a contract with them for the following year, and became really close with their family, the Ravellis, and actually lived with them for the season. And so it was myself, Filippo Ravelli, and Manuel Gonzalez were teammates.
Oh, yeah.
Pod favorite.
Yeah.
We like Manuel. He's a good bloke.
Yeah, no, he's good. Yeah. So we were teammates for that season, two seasons. So, yeah, from there we just I continued on with my Supersport 300 career and, you know, got, again, some really good results, front row starts, top eight finishes, top six finishes, you know, and a lot of crashes still. You know, just that kind of, I hit a thing and just kind of stayed in this same area with developing similar sort of mistakes. And after a few years, then COVID hit in 2021, I came home.
Yeah.
And had my first season on the Supersport 600.
Okay.
So after those few years of being on a 300, and I think it was really good. You know, people ask me, oh, do you wish you jumped up to the 600 earlier so you have more time on it and stuff? But I say no, because now being in the World Championship is I have so much more experience in how it runs, knowing everyone, you know, rocking up and knowing the rules.
Good networking, I guess, you said.
Yeah, and, you know, just those nerves of not knowing what the grid procedure is and stuff like that. Also knowing the tracks and being in those, like I was saying before, where the top 20, top 30 are all really fast. You know, if you start in a national championship really early on a 600, and I'm not saying that there's a wrong or a right way to go about it. A lot of people do that and you know, are great. You know, most people go that way. But for me, I think it's really good, was really good to be in the World Championship and a competitive field for a really long time. And I definitely don't regret having those few years in World Supersport 300.
It makes sense. And iron sharpens iron. You want to be up against the best. With that, with the 300s, how different are they compared to like just a production 300? Like what work do they have done on them?
So obviously your suspension, and there is in all the whole Supersport Superbike Championship is governed to make it, you know, similar to your bike that you can go and buy at the store. So I'd say that Supersport 300 probably goes the closest to that. In that it's suspension. It's a bike you can build in your shed at home. You know, it's still everything's perfect, and that's what the teams do. They just get everything, those little bits, the best they can. But and that's the difference between, you know, your average team or your really good team is just every little detail is as good as it can be. Yeah. But as far as the actual bike goes, it's your wire harness, your ECU. You can't do much to the engines or anything, I don't think. Maybe Yamaha is letting them now, I can't remember. But your wheels have to stay the same. So you've just got your rear sets, your electronics, your suspension, your fairings, your seat, just the usual stuff. So I'd say that they're probably the closest thing that you're going to get in a world championship to going to the store and buying the bike.
Yeah, and being like, as you said, like a mechanic by trade, does that help you now and then to help refine the bike? Because there's obviously some riders that just ride it.
Get on and ride.
That's it.
Yeah.
But for you, like, can you feel maybe a bit more, I need to adjust this?
Yeah, so I think it definitely helps, like, if I'm having problems engine problems and stuff. You know, I've come in, I've got a fair idea on what it could be. And also, like you said, adjust this or adjust that. But I never tell the suspension man what I want done. You know, that's his job.
Yeah.
That's what he's there for. I can relate to him and tell him what the bike's doing and feeling like. And I think I have more of an understanding on what the bike is doing because of that, but I still only ever translate in how it's feeling. I never tell them what to do or what to adjust or anything like that. Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah, cool. Just because my level of knowledge on that is here, but their job, what they've always done is be a suspension person. You know, they've got all of the knowledge in the world. They don't need me to tell them what to do.
Yeah, that's it. They'll dial it in to a T.
Yeah, and especially now, like with all the 2D data and everything, you know, you can, if you tell them what you're feeling, then they can look at the data and see that there and make the adjustments to what they're seeing on the data. Yeah.
No, that's fair.
It's pretty crazy how far the technology's come to be able to see little things like that. Like you said, the way that, you know, your rear might be coming up a bit too quick or whatever, and, you know, they just plug something in and go, yep, we can see that right there. It's like, it's really mind-boggling.
Well, it's all through the levels now. It's like even going down to the 300 level, 600, and then it's another universe when you look at MotoGP bikes. It's unbelievable. Continue on with your story. So you went to came back to Australia after COVID, raced in the local series for what, 2 or 3 years was it?
Just 1 year.
Just one year. Okay. Yeah.
So I came back, did my debut year on the Supersport 600, and that was with Bike Biz. So I was on that bright orange 600, and had a really good year. It was only 3 rounds though because it was COVID. Trying to learn the bike and be in the championship was hard because, you know, I hadn't had any time on a 600 before. So I ended up second in the championship. Brock Pearson and I battled through most of the championship, and Max Stouffer. So it was a pretty competitive year of Supersport. And I think we broke every lap record at every track we went to by quite a bit. So it was definitely a good year to come back and do Supersport. And straight away I gelled with the R6, you know, the 600 was my kind of riding style, you know? So I think because of my dirt track background, especially, you know, the more power generally for most dirt track people, the more power, the more that they like it sliding around or whatever. I don't know what it was, but I love the 600, you know, and kind of rode it in the right way straight away. So after a year of Australian Supersport, then the start of 2022, I had a test with Yart, so Yamaha Austria Racing Team. So they're well known for their endurance racing. They won the world championship last year, 2023. So I went over and did a test with them in January, I think, in Almeria in Spain, in 2022, and straight away went fast on their R6 World Supersport test. This was, and it was too late to put an entry into for World Supersport.
Yep.
So we just did some wildcards through the year, and being a mechanic by trade, I just moved straight over there.
What was that like, just moving over there?
Yeah, so I actually went over there to do a wildcard in Assen. And then after Assen, then that went really well with the Yacht team. And then it was straight away, when's our next one for them? You know, they wanted to continue on and keep doing them. So I went, I'll just stay here. And Mandy Keynes, who owns Yacht, offered me a job. So I just worked in the workshop and lived in Austria. Just to be going over for a couple of weeks to do this wild card and then staying over there was
that's pretty surreal.
It was pretty crazy. Throughout 2022 I did 3 wild cards, and you know, had some really good finishes considering, you know, new team and we were just doing wild cards. So had, I think, eighth was my best finish. So, you know, it was a really good way to start. And throughout 2022, and working at Yacht and stuff, it just all rolled really smoothly, which rolled into 2023 doing the European Challenge of the World Supersport. Yeah. So that was my debut year in that. I had some really good results. And, you know, with it being a new team, still with Yacht, with the same team, but their first full year in World Supersport, we didn't have that much data to go off, which was one of our, you know, sort of weaker points compared to, you know, your Tinkade or Evan Bros have how many years of fast data, you know. So going to the tracks and learning the tracks on a 600 also, so rocking up and you know, Bully goes out and first free practice is under the lap record and you're learning if it goes left or right. You know?
Scratching your head going, which way is this going?
Yeah. So that was definitely a difficult point, but I did have some really good results. You know, especially qualifying, I'd say was one of my strong points. Okay. I qualified fourth in Barcelona was my best, and then sixth at Portimao.
Yep.
So yeah, that was definitely one of my strong points. But throughout 2022, I got a fair bit of time on the R1 as well, and you know, just did a lot of track days and ride days and stuff on the R1, which was really good to get some experience on the superbike. And I think that's also helping me with this transition to the Ducati. You know, you got to ride it a little bit more like a superbike. So I think that was definitely really good. And so towards the end of the 2023 seasons, discussion started between myself and Davide Giuliano for D34G Racing and what it would look like in 2023 racing for them.
Nice. Hey guys, it's James from Motorsport Republica. Just want to give a shout out to HJC Australia. They have a brand new helmet coming out, the R412. Make sure you head down to your local dealer to check it out. It's got max defogging, 4 intakes, 3 exhaust vents. It comes with 4 different shell sizes and 5 different liners. It's got lift force and drag force reduced, optimized air ventilation. This helmet is an awesome new street helmet. Make sure you check it out. Go to hjc.com. Go to your local dealer and you better grab yours today. Thanks. I guess we're going through that. It's as you said, it's good that you went through that 300 class because it obviously sounds like it helped you immensely going into the 600s and doing some rides there through Europe. What's been your favorite track so far riding in Europe anyway?
I'd say out of my European tracks, you know, obviously Phillip Island's right up there with my favorite, but I wouldn't say that I have a track in particular that's my favorite. Portimao. No, but I do love Portimao, but there's, you know, just any fast flowing sort of tracks here, Aragon, Portimao, Barcelona, Bruno, just those, you know, high speed, fast, you know, big, wide, where you can just, don't know, it just doesn't feel like nothing's, you don't come into a corner and go, oh, that's wrong, that, you know, you feel awkward into there or anything like that, you know, just a nice, flowy, fast track is my main thing. But I really love Portimao and how up and down it is, and I've always been quick there as well. That always helps. And that makes a big difference in any rider's track choice. Yeah,
who are we talking? I think it was with Philip. He said we asked him what's his favorite track, and he's like, the one I'm just fastest at.
Anywhere you're quick.
That's such a racist mentality.
Yeah, 100%. But I'll be the same.
Yeah, that's
don't blame him. So with the new, there's a couple of new rules in Supersport. What do you think? What are your thoughts on the new top 9 from race 1, fastest laps going into your qualifying for race 2?
Yeah, so I think that's great. I've always been up for the, you know, some kind of progressive grid or something because, you know, so often something can happen in qualifying, or, you know, there's so many variables, and that qualifying, if you have a really bad qualifying, it can wreck your whole weekend. You know, you can be nearly guaranteed to come away with no points if you have a bad qualifying, just because the championship is so strong, and even those guys, you know, anyone who starts on that grid isn't easy to overtake. So I think that the progressive grid is really great. Also, this year we only have the one free practice.
Yeah.
So in the past years it's been 45 minutes, 45 minutes on Friday, so two free practices, and then the qualifying on Saturday morning, whereas now it's 45-minute practice and then 40-minute qualifying.
Yeah.
So I think that the progressive grid is really good, because you see, for example, this weekend with Ollie Bayliss, FP1, he had problems the whole way through. He didn't really even do a lap. And it's lucky here, you know, this is one of the only tracks where we're going to get away with that, because there is that test at the start of the week where everyone beds in their bikes and knows the gearing and everyone's warmed up. But a lot of the other tracks, you're not going to get away with that. So, you know, if you miss that FP1 and come into qualifying, you're not going to get a good qualifying. It really gives you a second chance to do better in the second race, you know. And I think it's better than a progressive grid, because it goes off the lap time. So even if you should be winning the race and you put in that good lap time and then you crash, you're not starting way back. You're starting with wherever your lap time sets you as well. Right. Yeah. So I think that's better than a progressive grid in that way. And also, if pole position, you know, it's only the top nine positions that do it. So if you're on pole in race one and get taken out or crash on the first lap or whatever, you're also only going back to a maximum of 10th position, which is a really good thing. I think, you know, I've had some people ask me, why aren't they doing it for the whole thing? But I think it's really good in that way too.
Yeah.
Yeah, for exactly right. Those reasons, like, you'd be pretty stiff going, right, I've just put it on pole, got taken out straight away, and now I'm starting from, you know, way back. Yeah. Like, it's definitely not on.
That's a bit unfair.
Yeah.
That's all right. And especially when it's not your mistake. Mm. We've seen a bit of your social media stuff as well. You do like a bit of a day in the life, really cool stuff. How did that all come about?
So that's my, I'm starting to kind of do the TikTok thing and do a day in the life, which was my media team's idea, the social key.
Okay.
So they got me onto it, and I just really want to give the fans an idea on what goes on behind the scenes, you know. So I think it's something that no one else is really doing.
Yeah,
you know?
No, not at all.
Yeah,
Scott Redding has his vlogs that he does, which I think are really good. But I think just a bit more of those, you know, shorter sort of videos and an idea on what it is through the days and what we do and what we do for training and what we eat and also what we do at home, not just at the track.
Yeah.
So I'm really just trying to give the fans the inside knowledge on stuff that they don't get to see. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's really, really interesting. And yeah, we definitely need obviously more of that.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the reasons why we started all this was getting young names out there, and because the sport needs that. So, and we look at things like Formula One with Drive to Survive. It's amazing if you give someone some coverage and show someone the behind the scenes. It just builds the sport massively.
Yeah, for sure. And I think this podcast is, like you're saying, the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. It's getting real racers involved and getting their understanding and how it is for them,
right. We were just talking to Mike Jones about that. Like, it's hard to understand what your thoughts are about anything on a 5-minute interview after you ride your Ducati or something like that, where longer form interviews, it helps so much.
Yeah, 100%. And what you're doing is great too, because it shows your personality as well.
Yeah.
And same as this, like, not to toot our own horn, but, you know, it is about putting yourself out there and showing the personality, because, you know, people can perceive, you know, in so many ways. So it's great to see people going, yep, this is me, this is what I'm doing. Mm. And you see that personality in that funny side or serious side, and that, like, I'm on, like, it's time to work. It's awesome.
Yeah, I think it's really good, and it also shows people that we're not robots.
Yeah, exactly right.
Everyone out there has their own life at home and their what they do and their hobbies, and motorbike races are weird. There's so many different types we've of motorbike races. Yeah. So I think the other thing that it might get people to understand is that we aren't robots. We're not one type of person and every racer is the same type of person. You know, there's so many different personalities and you know, people with weird habits and all kinds of things, you know. So I think it will help people get an understanding of our life behind the scenes, and also, you know, I want to show them a lot of what's going on at the track and help them understand how the World Superbike rolls a little bit more, and like the tyre compounds and that sort of stuff as well. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, it's wicked, man.
I was just going to ask, motorcycles aside, what do you like to do in your free time?
I love fishing.
Okay.
love fishing, and that's one thing that I didn't get to do in Europe that I definitely missed heaps from home. So fishing, I'm married, so I hang out with my wife a lot.
Great answer.
we just hang out and I don't know what we do.
Does she like fishing? You drag her out?
Yeah. She comes out fishing. She's really taking a shine to it since we come home this time.
Okay, that's all right.
Been flat out and just been able to have our own time for a bit and go have a fish or whatever.
Do you go out in a boat, or is it just off like, oh, I have no idea with fishing.
You mean off the pier at Cowes?
No. So bit of both, you know. When I was living in Australia, obviously the last couple of years I haven't, but just had a little tinny that I went out on and mainly fishing off the boat.
Grouse.
Wicked. You mentioned before you were with Yacht, and they're known for endurance as well. Have you thought about doing endurance racing? Have you done endurance racing?
So endurance racing is something I definitely want to do in the future. You know, for now my focus is on World Supersport and sprint racing, as they call it, you know, so, and building my career in that. But I definitely am really interested in going into endurance, and working at Yacht and with those guys and stuff really gave me a good insight to it. And, you know, they were basically teammates, you know, Marvin Fritz and Carol Hanica and Nicolo Canepa.
Yeah.
When I was racing Supersport, you know, it's not exactly, but we were quite sort of close. So racing under the same roof. So it really gave me a good insight to all that, and you know, it's something I definitely want to do in the future. And I have done a couple of endurance races, not world endurance races, but there's a 7-hour at Assen.
That's mad.
Yeah, there you go. I didn't know they did that.
And it's actually starting to grow a bit, you know. So when I raced it, I was on the team with Marvin Fritz and Carol Hanica and
600s?
No, Superbike.
Superbike.
Yeah. Yeah, and also another guy.
Yeah.
And we won it. Nice. Yeah, so but it's really starting to build that 7-hour as well. But I also did the Sydney 5-hour probably 5 or 6 years ago on a 600.
Yeah.
And Jack Passfield was my teammate then. I really love the endurance racing, and I'm quite into like my fitness and stuff as well. So, you know, I really enjoy, and just being on a motorbike, being able just to go lap, you know, I just love riding so much. So I think it's something I definitely want to do, not yet in my career, you know, further into the future. But yeah, keen as.
It's cool. And Daniel's probably sick of me talking about it, but we spoke to Philip Otto about endurance racing and Damo Cudlin as well. And the insights those guys have, like, well, I was speaking to Philip and I was dialed in. I was glued. I'm like, now I'm a massive fan. Like,
favorite rider ever.
Yeah. But the stories they have of like doing a Le Mans 24 hour, and he shows us a photo of his eyes and like how red they were. And then it's so interesting hearing him talk about David Checker, who was his teammate with a couple other riders. I can't remember who he said. And after 24 hours, David Checker is obviously a veteran of sport, done the Le Mans so many times, and he was like still pretty fresh. Like you're just so used to it. And Philip was just like dead to the world after 24 hours of riding. Like, and there's so many different aspects to riding. Like if you're at 3 a.m., he was talking about the smoke haze from cooking all the sausages. Yeah. And then it burns your eyes. Like it's... Yeah, so interesting.
I think it's really cool, and you know, being like I said, around those Yark guys for two full seasons, seeing just in the workshop, they are just nonstop trying to figure out ways to change your wheels faster, to do these faster, to have the fairings come off faster. You know, it's not just the pit change of changing the wheels either. You know, you put fuel in it, obviously, but you have to be ready for a crash or whatever. Yeah. So every single part on those bikes are interchangeable as quickly as possible, you know. And even watching them in the workshop, put an engine in one or something, you know, it's 10 minutes and then
that's so crazy.
Time, you know.
That's crazy, or
you know, just stupid times to do stuff. You know, it's really cool. And I think that's something that a lot of people don't see is how much development they have to put in to stay at the top. And also, you know, the riders do their stint and it would be incredibly hard to do a 24-hour race as a rider and a mechanic, you know, because the mechanics don't have like, okay, you're on now. Like, they've got the same mechanics for 24 hours. So, you know, I think that they get to have like little micro naps in between, but even though, so your maximum stint you can kind of get out of a tank is, you know, 40 minutes, an hour maybe. So they can have like little micro naps in between doing that, but you still got to have everything in the right position and all the tires changed and they have managers just for the tires, obviously, because they've got so many there sitting ready.
Yeah.
But in those micro naps, I guess they'd have to be ready for if there's a crash or something as well. Like it would never be able just to go and relax. You know, you got to be for ready to jump up and be at it straight away or if the bike has a problem or something, they have to be there ready to go.
That's right. Exactly. And like just the responsibility of, you know, being 3 a.m. and you're tired as a mechanic and then like you still have to make sure every nut's done up just right or whatever it is. Because if that doesn't happen, like, or a chain comes off, whatever reason, tightened, like you almost race over. So
yeah, I remember Damien Cullen was saying you could sleep up to 15 minutes and they wake you up again and they wake you up again. They wake because you can't get into that deep sleep. It was just crazy to hear.
Yeah.
You'd almost be on edge anyway that you couldn't even rest for 15 minutes, I don't think. How'd you pull up after the 7-hour one?
Yeah, so after the 7-hour race...
Why is it 7 hours, by the way?
Well, it used to be... Before it was 7 hours, it was kilometres. And then they worked it out and it was going to be about 7 hours.
There's always 8, 12,
yeah, no, so,
24.
So, I obviously was pretty tired after it, you know, not so much like full asleep tired, but your muscles and everything are just a bit buggered. I don't know. I always am training really hard and as long as you're on a bike a fair bit, which I was that year, and riding the R1 a fair bit, it wasn't like crazy difficult to do the 7 hours, but I couldn't imagine just keep going for the next 20 hours or whatever. Yeah.
G'day guys, James here from Motorsport Republica. Our brand new t-shirts have dropped. So we have Marquez, we've got Daniel Ricciardo, we've got Verstappen, Charles Leclerc in men and women, and a Gent Lawrence, Hunter Lawrence double champs tee. Jump onto motorsportrepublica.com.au. Check out our new tees. We've got air freshener still on there. Go on our socials, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook. It's all on there. Make sure to check it out. All your support means everything. Thanks, guys. What do you do for training?
Well, I think the best training is being on a bike.
Yeah.
No matter, and it doesn't really matter what type of bike, you know. Best bike to be on is your race bike.
Yeah.
That's not possible majority of the time. So any other bike that you're on is training the right muscles, you know. So you can go for a run or go to the gym or go cycling or whatever is going to help you like with your cardio and stuff, but you're still never going to train the exact same muscles as what you do when you're racing.
Yeah.
So I think that the best training is being on the bike. Obviously, that's not really possible quite a lot. So I do a lot of running and then just in the gym and a lot of cardio in the gym, you know, your ski machine and rowing and the assault bike and, you know, just kind of have a bit of a,
like a
bit
circuit.
Yeah. And also quite a lot of free weights and stuff just to – I don't like using the machined weights because, you know, on a bike you're not always in the same position. You're moving around quite a lot. So you need those little muscles to be strong in there as well. So it's – and a lot of people think that the skinnier you are for motorbike racing, the better. But to prevent injuries and stuff as well, you do have to have some muscle there.
That makes sense, yeah.
To, you know, so your shoulder doesn't come out or whatever. So I think that doing some weights is really good and really important as well, yeah.
Yeah, no, that, man, that 100% makes sense. Do you do a lot of core work as well, especially because I feel like, you know, muscling around the bike, you'd have to have quite a bit of core strength.
Yeah, so I think that the main thing is using a bike, you use everything. So just trying to kind of even everything out so you're pretty much in check everywhere, yeah.
Yeah, nah, yeah. Fair.
Keep it all activated. What's the goal, mate? Are you looking towards World Superbikes later on?
So my goal has been to be World Superbike champion. And, you know, a lot of people ask if I want to transition over to the GP, which I think would be really cool, but... you know, I just love the superbike paddock and how relaxed it is my goal is to be World Superbike champion on a factory bike is ideal. Awesome. Yeah. So I mean, don't get me wrong, if I had the chance to be MotoGP world champion, I would come back.
Take that.
Yeah. But no, I definitely am keen just to continue on the route of World Superbikes and I just love the paddock and the championship and everyone's cool and it's a bit more relaxed and you can get around the fans and I don't know. I think it's fun to be in. Yeah.
It's such a different feel between the two paddocks. Like we've experienced that this weekend.
Yeah, it's eye-opening for you too.
Yeah, it's very eye-opening. But what's so going into this season, what's your goal this season? Are you wanting podiums, top fives? What's realistic for you?
Yeah, so this season I'm racing the European round, World Supersport. So we are scored separately and also in the World Championship. So obviously I'm aiming to win the European Challenge. This year I've got Simone Corsi, De Rosa, some other fast guys up against me. So, you know, it's not going to be a walk in the park. I came second last year in the World Supersport Challenge is what they call it, to Tom Booth Amos. And, you know, a lot of people are looking at me as the favourite for this year, but there is also those other fast guys there. It's not going to be a walk in the park. Like I said, you know, Corsi...
He's been around the
track. Yeah, he's been around for a long time.
So is De Rosa. And even last year, Corsi did a few wild cards and finished right up the front. You know, he's going to be a serious contender in it. And I think that obviously my goal will be to win that. For the World Supersport side of things, I just want to – I got a few good results in, like, running up the front of that. But I just want to get the consistency there and be able to finish up the front consistently, you know, get a few podiums – definitely get some front row starts and get those results and just try and make it so it's not like, you know, every few races, then I get up the front and then I'm, but my main point is around the points. I want my general position to be in those front spots. Yeah.
Consistency.
Yeah. And I think that another thing that I'm keen to work on is the like learning the team and getting a good feeling with them and learning how to, because I want to continue with this team for the future, obviously. And, you know, just getting some data on the bike and learning to ride the Ducati properly and learning all the tracks on the Ducati. We've also got some new tracks this year that I haven't been to. So learning them, just kind of betting myself into the championship and setting myself up to be in contention for the world championship the following year.
Yeah, that's wicked, man. And it's a tough field. It's only getting stronger. So yeah, it's going to be awesome racing this year across all the categories, really. So, yeah, to see you up there is going to be pretty unreal.
Yeah, it'll be really cool. I think another goal for me for this year is to land some big sponsors. You know, I don't have any big sponsors at the moment. I just got little companies who are helping me out, which is, you know, awesome.
Yeah.
But it's really hard to get over there and do it with a blank helmet. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Is it for networking yourself? I remember you were talking about this before, but is it just being at the paddock, talking to the right people? Is that how it works? Or
yeah. So over the off season, I've got a fundraiser night coming up next Friday. So I've just been nonstop working, calling people, you know, trying to raise some money for this fundraiser that I'm doing. Also just trying to get businesses on board, and it's so hard reaching out, cold calling people, you know, when you're not even sure if they know what a World Superbike is, you know. So it's really hard, and I think that's something else that I'm keen to show on my TikTok is how difficult it is for riders to get that sponsorship, and that it's not people reaching out to us, and that it's really difficult. And, you know, I think networking around the pits and stuff, making calls, getting your social media big, trying to be on TV, just doing everything that you can to get yourself out there is the main thing of it, and I'm not the best at it, you know. I'm still learning, but one of my big goals for this year is definitely to land a couple of big sponsors.
Yeah, Grouse, that's awesome. Where can people find you?
TikTok TommyGun71, Instagram TommyGun71, you know, anywhere. Oh, I've got a website that's TomEdwardsRacing.com, you know, and basically on socials. Beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah, sweet. We'll chuck all your socials in our our bio and stuff and make sure people get around it. We'll pop your Instagram up on the clip and whatnot. But Tom, thanks for coming on, man. It's been awesome. Glad we got to organize it. So
yeah, it's a really interesting journey.
Yeah, no,
and looking forward to the future for you as well.
Yeah, no, super keen, and hopefully I'm racing here next year at Phillip Island. So
100%.
Thanks for the podcast, and yeah.
No worries.
We got
something for you. Hold tight.
What do we got?
Only good stuff.
I wish it was a sponsor, but maybe next year.
It's just a little gift we like to give anyone that comes on, just to say thanks for taking the time. And it's just a helmet.
Oh, that's mad.
We've signed.
Thank you.
Just put a message on the top for you.
Yeah,
thanks
cool.
to Stacey from HJC Australia for sorting us out.
Yeah.
As always. You. So.
Yeah,
just a little something, man, for our token of appreciation, you know, taking the time out.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Chatting with us three, you know, we're not the easiest to deal with. So.
That's right. So when you get your world championship trophy, this sits in front of it and then that can be next to it.
Yeah, don't forget about us.
Nah, awesome, Tom. Thanks again.
Thanks
best of luck for everything.
No, thank you.
Best luck for the year, man. We'll be cheering you on for sure.
Yeah, thanks.
Good, awesome, man.
Boys.
Thanks, guys.
Cheers, boys.
Cheers.